Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time, the Athletic's dedicated Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by George Corgan and Chris Woff. George Corgan, how are you? You okay?
No, Taylor, my eyes are bleeding.
Oh, lovely.
Both eyes, they're bleeding profusely after watching that last night. And I'm starting today's show with a plea. Could we please talk about XG? Could we please talk about VAR? Could we talk about double pivots? Could we even spend 20 minutes talking about egg booling as opposed to talking about that shit?
I'm up for that. Chris, what do you think? Are you up for that, Chris?
Well, I mean, seeing as Jacob Whitehead, who was actually the person at the game, has basically refused to come on this podcast because he couldn't face talking about it, then yes, I think that's probably a good idea.
To be honest, I think if I'd been at that match, I don't think I'd wanted to have relived it either, especially not in this arena. But thank you very much for joining us again, chaps. Well, that was pretty miserable, wasn't it? Let's be honest, George. That was god-awful, wasn't it?
Talking about XG, so Chris made the point at some point last night that Newcastle had an XG of 0.01 at half-time. I mean, that is incredible, but it is also utterly pointless. How can you have an XG of 0.01? I mean, that just means nothing. I mean, that just means naught, doesn't it? I mean, it's XG of zero. You can't score 0.01 of a goal. Why isn't XG just rounded down or rounded up so it's understandable? If you have an XG of one, it means you should have scored one goal. If you have an XG of 0.01, it means you're going to score no goals. Fucking annoying.
But you can't compare it as easily if you've got one game where your XG was 1.2 and the one game where the XG was 0.8.
You can't score 1.2 goals. It's an XG of 1.2.
Yeah, but it's like if you divide across the course of a season how many goals you've scored, you can't score 2.3 goals per game in an actual game, but you can have an average of 2.3 goals across the season per game.
You can't score 2.3 goals ever. Doesn't matter how. Anyway, look, it was utterly miserable. It was. Well, I don't know what it was.
It was like a reminder of days gone by, wasn't it?
Well, it sort of was. I mean, so like this season, you talk about the incredible highs that we've had this season, and we've also had some big lows. But this game, it just felt like a so what game all the way through it. It was just such little happened from a Newcastle perspective.
Yeah,
and that was a sort of weird. The weird thing, really, it was a huge contrast to Spurs. Spurs was obviously one of those great highlights from this season. And then for this to follow it straight afterwards, firstly, you have to say well done to Palace. They were
by
far the superior team.
They were really good.
You know, we are, because we're a Newcastle podcast, we only really focus on Newcastle, but fair play to Palace. They, you know, in spite of what we're going to come on to talk about throughout this pod, they were excellent. They were really good. They had the best players on display. We talked beforehand about what kind of Palace might turn up after two really good results, but they were excellent. But this was such a contrast from a Newcastle perspective to Spurs. I mean, one of the things that Eddie Howe said afterwards, which kind of made me laugh a little bit. I mean, he talked about the high of Spurs to the low of tonight. And then he said, we started well for 2 minutes. It's like, if that's the best you can say,
yeah.
It's not a great compliment, that, is it?
2 minutes of quality followed by 93 minutes of absolute shit. They were a bit shot shy as well, Chris, weren't they? Players seemingly refusing to pull the trigger repeatedly in the opposition half. And even how Eddie Howe said, it baffled me that we were reluctant to shoot.
Yeah, I mean, that was strong. I thought he was quite strong post-match. Jacob, who did message us after the game, said that he thought Howe was uncharacteristically critical of his players.
After the win against Tottenham, we were prepared to go the same way. I thought tactically the game would suit us that way. I had no issue doing so. But our execution has to be better than that. Now, our execution against Tottenham was at the highest level today, wasn't it? So yes, we made substitutions, we made tactical tweaks. But as always, when you talk tactically, it's always about the attitude of the group first and foremost. If you're not quite where you need to be for whatever reason mentally, then it doesn't matter what you do tactically, you're going to fall down. And I felt that's probably where we were today.
I mean, he's right. I mean, Newcastle didn't actually have an effort on goal until the 45 plus 2 minutes, I think it was, when Fabian Schär had a header which was never really going towards goal, sort of deflected behind.
Yeah.
They didn't have a shot on target until the 86th minute, which I think was Elliot Anderson's sort of pretty tame header. The only real chances that they had were Alexander Isak played through by Bruno Guimaraes, yeah, in the first half. Really good ball. Isak does well to begin with to get beyond Anderson, heads it, but Henderson comes out and gets there just before him. And then also in injury time in the second half, when Anthony Gordon has a shot from inside the box, which he sort of creates for himself to a certain degree. But beyond that, no, there were a few openings. Like the first attack Newcastle really had, when Harvey Barnes had it in the box, cut inside onto his right, he thought he was going to shoot, and he actually tries to flick it back-heeled almost to Anthony Gordon. They're on the same wavelength, and the move fizzles out. And I thought that was a sort of constant theme. Alexander Isak himself even seemed a bit reluctant to shoot, yeah, at certain points. There was that, I don't know why there was that hesitancy, but there was from Newcastle for some reason, and that hasn't been like them, because recently they've tended to almost shoot on sight in terms of when they've got in around the box.
It was a sort of tired performance, and that's the kind of strange thing about it, because, you know, the other thing to say is that Palace had played on Sunday.
Yes.
They'd had a brilliant result, 5-2 against West Ham. And of course, you know, that's the kind of result that gives you energy and gives you momentum. But Newcastle had had 10 days off, and we saw the same sort of thing from Eddie Howe that we saw at Fulham not too long ago, where there was a stoppage for injury. He calls all the players over the touchline, and again, he looks furious. And he's asking them, you know, asking the players to raise the game, asking what's going on. And at Fulham, there was a response. It didn't happen straight away. But as the game went on, Newcastle got stronger. And on this occasion, there was just nothing. I don't think Newcastle were physically tired, obviously. I don't think there's any reason for that. It's just that they didn't turn up. They didn't turn up in any way, shape or form.
I found it quite surprising that it was exactly the same lineup. I know we're limited in options as well, but it was the same lineup with Spurs, and essentially, Chris, it was the same system as well. And we said on the last show, do we think he'll keep it the same, or do you think we'll change it? And he's kind of stuck rather than twisted, hasn't he? And it wasn't horses for courses this time, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised. I said on the last podcast, I would be surprised if he stuck with exactly the same system. I mean, we know that Howe likes to reward players and teams who do perform well match to match. I assume part of the rationale was it's almost matching up what Palace themselves do. They do play with three at the back and since Glasner's come in, and maybe that was exactly the thought behind it. But I mean, in particular, this is not meaning to dig anyone out, and I know we're going to come on to it later on, but the right-hand side really did struggle, and Palace sort of targeted it, and Newcastle didn't really have an out ball. They couldn't move the ball up the pitch. It weren't good enough in possession. And against Spurs, the difference was Spurs played a far higher line, which allowed Newcastle to be able to get in behind and be more aggressive in attack. It yes. wasn't quite the same with Palace, and except that time that Bruno Guimaraes sent Alexander Isak through, and maybe one other occasion when Guimaraes managed to send someone through, Newcastle didn't really have that opportunity. They weren't the same rapid attacking transitional force that they were against Spurs. And so, yes, it was. I mean, Howe seemed to be resolute in his defence afterwards that it wasn't, he believed that they necessarily the incorrect system. But I mean, we're using hindsight for this, but it didn't work, and it didn't look like the players were as clear in their plan against Palace as maybe they were, or at least weren't able to execute it in exactly the same way as they were against Spurs to target the weaknesses of Spurs. They weren't able to target whatever weaknesses they believed Palace had.
So this is something that I was going to come on to later, but I think it makes sense to sort of address now, because I thought it was sort of fascinating that, you know, they had this new style against Spurs. They did play three at the back, and it did bring a change. It brought a change in terms of the possession Newcastle had. They, you know, particularly at home, they want to be front foot. They want to dominate the ball. And this was a different style of play against a team that in Spurs, who have their own style too. And obviously it worked very well. It was very, very clinical, but it worked. And so actually the day before Palace, it was something I asked Eddie Howe about. I said, have you found a blueprint now for a way of playing?
A blueprint,
yeah. Well,
good, yeah. I do. I like that.
I like to lapse onto Francais. Donnez-moi un break, Chris, as Boris Johnson would no doubt say. But I said, have you found a blueprint? Or was the Spurs match an exception? And this is what he, dis-moi, Eddie Howe, s'il vous plaît.
I always say that we have principles that we don't change. And that game, we didn't see any principles change. We just saw a moulding of a game plan, really, around, you know, for that individual game. But we did very similar for Wolves. So it's not exclusive to one game. We will always try and attack the game as we see best to try and win it, but without sacrificing certain principles which we think are key.
So just to clarify, that was Eddie Howe before the Palace match. Newcastle sacrificed all their principles against Palace, didn't they? It was just such a contrast. Anyway, I just wanted to highlight that. I'm not sure it was the most revealing answer he's ever given, but I just thought it was I thought that was an interesting point.
Chris, Palace's aggression really got to us, didn't it? It really affected us, and the familiar scenes were Newcastle repeatedly giving the ball away in their own half and from deep, and they couldn't seem to get out. And when they did get out, Palace were just sweeping up behind them.
Yeah, I mean, the point that George makes about Newcastle looking fatigued, I think, is a good one. I mean, we know Newcastle are very much at their best when they do match teams physically, and that they are in it as an athletic contest almost. And yet Palace seem to be first to just about everything. They did give Newcastle a bit of a rough treatment, but Newcastle do that to sides when they're at their very best, and they didn't seem to accept that particularly well, beyond maybe Bruno Guimaraes and a few times where particularly, I keep referencing it, but there weren't many other highlights really from Newcastle point of view from the game. But when he did release Alexander Isak through for that chance, he had three Palace players around him, but he managed to manoeuvre his body round, get face towards the goal and play that lovely through ball. But beyond that, Newcastle, they had no real press-resistant players in terms of anyone who could hold on to possession, really. Elliot Anderson did on occasion, but it wasn't sort of the stellar performances he's maybe put in recent weeks. But you could pick out just about any Newcastle player and say it was the same. The ball wasn't sticking. They weren't moving the ball particularly well. There were quite a few times where several players just seemed to float balls directly forward to Palace players. There was a couple of times where Cher did it, Jacob Murphy did it, several occasions where that happened. And this is it is a long-term problem that Newcastle have. Even when they were playing well away from home last season, I'd say one of the big criticisms you could see, and I think this is partly to do with the fact that they need to raise the technical quality in general of the entire squad, is that they aren't good enough on the ball. Under pressure, we're in those situations that they don't retain the ball well enough and sort of buy themselves a little bit of time and to relieve pressure by just holding on to possession. Instead, often when they get caught in this cycle, we'll just repeatedly give it away as they did against Palace. And that for the first half an hour in particular, it was just sort of relentless that Palace just kept on getting the ball back and coming back at them. It was very frustrating.
There was a point after about an hour where Bruno looked visibly frustrated and just decided to start dribbling the ball through instead of passing it, because he realised that we weren't going to be able to keep the ball. And he thought, balls to this, I'm just going to dribble it as much as I can. It kind of worked as well. He got through a few times. There was a lot of struggles down that right-hand side, George, which we've already mentioned in passing. Murphy, Longstaff, Kraft, possession lost on that side led to both of the goals. It was a struggle.
It really was, yeah. Chris has pointed that out, and I think he's spot on. I mean, I think Murphy in particular had a tough night.
He really did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of really struggling, and there was just kind of none of the cohesion. I mean, again, the impressive thing about the Spurs match was that sort of how every part of the team worked and looked incredibly smooth, looked well drilled, well oiled, and everything was the opposite against Palace. It was just so bitty. There was no connection between the different parts of the side, and yeah, that side of the team just was not functioning. Possession, Newcastle gave it away repeatedly. Having said that, I mean, the second goal in particular, Martin Dubravka, it just goes straight through Martin Dubravka, that second goal. I mean, you expect more of a goalkeeper in those circumstances. I know the shot was hit very firmly, but I mean, I think he should be stopping that.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually going to interject at a different point, but if we're just going to come on to Dubravka, he's just a goalkeeper, and this does not mean to dig him out, and I know I've done it in the past. He doesn't fill you with that much confidence. A few times when the ball comes in the box and you're not quite sure exactly what he's going to do. But yeah, certainly for the second goal, I think he should do better. It wasn't Martin Dubravka's fault that Newcastle lost or lost 2-0. There was a collective team performance.
Yeah.
But you just think maybe someone like Nick Pope would made a better attempt to save it. The other point I was going to make was, I mean, George praising Palace, the one Palace player, and this is not really offering any insight because a lot of people did, who I want to pick out is Eze, because I thought he was, I mean, he's the sort of player
fabulous,
who Newcastle could really do with in that sort of match where, for all of what Palace were trying to do in terms of pressing aggressively and causing Newcastle issues to a certain degree, the only person really in and around the box who was making things happen was Eze, and he's just got such ingenuity about him. He's got a lovely touch and ability to stroke the ball around players and to get in and out of those little pocket spaces. And yeah, I just thought that he can see, he's a player Newcastle have liked for a long while, and you can see why they and so many of their clubs admire him, because he has just star quality about him.
It was all a bit too Eze for him, wasn't it?
Oh my God. Right, let's move on.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hate.
The big talking point, really, from Newcastle fans' point of view, should we have had a penalty? 77th minute, Sean Longstaff goes down
he is under contract, so
yes. Sean Longstaff goes down under contact from Hughes. George, what do we think, pen or no pen?
Well, it was, I mean, it's a sort of interesting one in the sense that when you see it again, it's clear that there is contact. It's clear that the way Sean Longstaff is moving as affected. He's put off his stride. His body shape changes.
Yep.
And he then goes down. Now, he goes down very easily from that point, and you know, that's a bit exaggerated. He doesn't look like a natural penalty winner in the sense of how he goes he goes down. But I think Chris and I, in fact, I think you the same, Taylor, I think we all agree that you can see why it wasn't overturned. I mean, I think there wasn't enough to overturn that decision. I think if it had been given the other way, and it could have been given the other way
easily,
I don't think that would have been overturned either. I think that's so. I think it goes right down, kind of right down the middle in that sense. But I know people were saying that he should have stayed on his feet and he should have shot.
I think the chance is gone. I think the touch takes the ball away from him.
So, I mean, in that sense, I think it's a penalty. But again, I don't think there's enough in it for it to have been overturned. And I mean, a bigger picture, I know it's too easy to say this really, because, you know, you can have games where you're terrible, don't get a decision that you should have got, and can lose. But I suppose my kind of wider point is that after a game like that, you know, Newcastle have got nowhere to look apart from themselves. You can't say that anything that happened in that match was a travesty, really.
Chris, what's your thoughts on this one? Somebody who, if we need someone to give us an interesting view on a penalty or not a penalty, you're normally the man that I would come to. What's your thoughts on this?
I mean, as much as it pains me to say it, I agree with everything that George has said.
Right,
on the incident. Yeah,
just make a note of the date there. That's 13:02 on the 25th of April, 2024. Good. Okay, we finally got one.
Yes. No, I have no more to add, and I now resign from the podcast.
Excellent.
Finally, I've broken it. Finally.
Some criticism, Chris, though, for Howe has resurfaced. As we said earlier, he made some pointed remarks about players' attitudes as well, didn't he?
Has criticism for how we said, I haven't really looked that much at social media, but I presume most of this has been directed from there, or is in reference to.
I mean, if you go on X, it's there all the time. I think you just got to pick the wrong person to look at, and you'll see it. But there you go.
I mean, Jacob in his piece after the game has written about both Newcastle players and how needing to learn how to basically problem solve within matches a bit more, which I do get. I mean, this is on the back of Newcastle have just had a couple of very positive results, a string of three wins and a draw in their previous four games, and they did play four different ways, but they tended to be that they're sort of set up in different ways, really, whereas in matches, maybe they do need to problem solve a little bit better. The stuff about the players' attitude was interesting, and I think that it's having listened to it, his post-match press conference, it seems to suggest to me, I think Howe was frustrated because what he had told or asked the players to do, what they practiced, was not what actually came out within the match. Yeah. They didn't actually fulfil the game plan and tactics that he actually wanted there. He said that tactics, it's all about players' attitude. It's not just about the system that you play. It's also about how the players actually implement that. And so I think that was a sort of frustration that he, him basically being exasperated with the way that the players delivered it. But then you have to say, maybe the delivery of it, maybe the actual practicing during the sessions over the course of the last 10 days hasn't actually brought out exactly what Eddie Howe wanted as well. So I think everyone was culpable within that. But it's very much for me how they react on Saturday, because if this was just a one-off and just a poor night and it just didn't work, fine. But if they let this have a hangover and take them into Saturday, then it becomes more of a concern. But you kind of, they've a team which has lacked consistency for the best part of 4 months had just gone through a four-match run where they'd won three and drawn one. And yes, they've had a terrible outing here, but if they return and get a victory over Sheffield United on Saturday, as frustrating as last night was, I think then you say, right, well, at least they've bounced back from that. For me, I want to see what comes next before we'd be overly critical, I think.
I think the point that Chris makes is important. I mean, I think we have to, you know, look back to the Man City defeat in the cup when Newcastle go out and they've, you know, got nothing left to play for in terms of trophies. They were in a difficult position in the league. The response since then has been very good. It's not been consistent in terms of performances or the way they've played, but I think you do have to sort of recognise that. I think the real disappointment about Palace is that their standards have risen again and they didn't meet those standards. I mean, they didn't come anywhere near against the Palace game. And it's kind of more frustrating having put themselves back in a really good position in the table. We've seen this season that these things can happen. Newcastle have not been a consistent team this season, but I think this is probably the biggest contrast we've seen between two games, to go from Spurs to this in the space of 10 days with the same lineup is just absolutely baffling. It's a head scratcher.
And substitutes failed to change the game later on as well, Chris, didn't they? It was nice to see Callum Wilson back, but difficult to bring him on in those circumstances. Lewis Hall as well, not necessarily a game-changing player. Livramento, not an option despite being named on the bench. So mitigation there, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the Livramento situation is a little bit odd because he did come on against Spurs, but Howe's referenced the ankle injury which he's got, which is still affecting him. I mean, obviously, Kieran Trippier still isn't back.
Yeah.
I mean, I asked Howe about that the other week and he seemed quite frustrated by me asking why that he was out for a sort of prolonged spell, but he still isn't back despite that the latest information we had was when it was extended, it was all would likely be back around Palace. While he wasn't in the squad, it doesn't sound like he's necessarily likely to be around for Sheffield United the weekend either. Hall, I thought, actually made a bit of an impact when he came on. He tried to get forward anyway. He was lively down left wing without actually really doing that much. But in terms of relative to other Newcastle performances, I thought he did all right. But I mean, the one positive, I suppose, you can take from the game was Callum Wilson coming back. He'd missed 10 matches with the pectoral injury that required surgery that he suffered against Nottingham Forest. It was the first time that Wilson and Isak had been on the pitch in the Premier League together since Boxing Day. So that in itself is huge as well, to have had both strikers there and available together. And Isak sort of came deeper and wider and actually got more into the game and got more of the ball when he was pulled deeper, whereas he could have frustrated figure up front. By half time, he'd had the fewest touches on the pitch. I think he only had 13. And Newcastle couldn't get him in the match. Wilson, without actually having a chance, I thought offered a bit of a focal point. And obviously, he's going to be a bit fitness shy in terms of match fitness. But going forward between now and the end of the season, to have Wilson as an option coming off the bench is huge and hopefully gives Newcastle the opportunity to end matches in a stronger way, even if the other injuries to Nick Pope and Joel Linton, even if they're not coming back quite as quickly as I think maybe a lot of people hoped. Sorry, I know you wanted to interject, George, and I know I've gone for a while. The one thing I wanted to say again from Eddie Howe's pre-match press conference, which George was at, which I thought was a little bit odd that he said as well, is he talked about that there'd been reports that a few players could be back and he didn't know where they'd emerge from. I'd just like to go back to Eddie Howe's pre-Spurs press conference when he said that he hoped that three or four players would be back and available for Crystal Palace. So I just wanted to return. That is where some of those reports actually emerged from, with Eddie Howe's very own comments pre-Spurs.
It came from you.
So, yeah.
No, the only caveat I would add to what Chris has said there is that, you know, Callum Wilson's return is a positive. It's a boost, but it's only a theoretical one, because, you know, the problem with Wilson's fitness this season is that it's not been lasting. And, you know, we can say it's a boost if he's then back on the bench or back involved again on Saturday. And, you know, the thing is, we've had this situation so many times this season where you look at the bench and think, finally, there's a bit of respite there. I mean, there wasn't really a lot of respite on the bench. I mean, it's, you know, Livramento wasn't used. There still isn't a huge amount of, you know, very few game-changing options on the bench. And as I say, we've been here so many times before, and then other people have got injured, and it's turned out to be a bit of a mirage. So, you know, theoretically, having Wilson back, having him back as an option is fantastic. You know, Howe talked before the match and said that because of the nature of his injury, because it's been a tit injury, he's been able to work on his lower body, on his legs. And so in those terms, you know, coming back shouldn't be a problem with him. It shouldn't take him a long time to find his legs again, because that's not been where the injury has been. His problem was the idea of putting himself back into that physical confrontation, the physical battle where he might get hit on the pectoral muscle on that sort of part of his body. I mean, there were no signs that he was feeling that or worried about that against Palace. Yeah, so it's a positive, but it's only a theoretical positive at this point.
Yes, right then, let's have a little quick break, chaps, and we'll be back in a moment to preview that Sheffield United game.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Okay, boys, Saturday at 3 p.m. against Sheffield United. A big game now, this one, isn't it? But if you could ask for a fixture in the Premier League, for any fixture, this is what you would choose to try and bounce back from that Palace game, isn't it, Chris?
Yes, well, Newcastle United can actually mathematically relegate Sheffield United if they win on Saturday. That is after Sheffield United twice took the lead at Old Trafford, but ended up losing 4-2. Last night as well against Manchester United, which allowed Manchester United to leapfrog Newcastle into sixth place. So there's been a switch around there, and Newcastle do need a response from that. It is, if you're going to select any game, the one you would take, not only because Newcastle put eight past them at Bramall Lane early in the season, but also because Sheffield United have now conceded more goals than any other side ever have across a 38-game Premier League season, and yet they've still got four games remaining. And they are down, and they've been down for a little while. Chris Wilder basically conceded that a couple of weeks ago and said that we know we're going to be playing the Championship next season. But Newcastle can't just take that lightly. They still have to go into the match, still have to be professional, they still have to make sure that they actually do return to the levels that they have shown in previous games, because if they start anything like they did against Palace, certainly the first 20 minutes against Fulham, then any side will fancy the chances against them. A 3 o'clock kickoff at St James's Park is very, very different to an 8 o'clock kickoff at Selhurst Park in terms of the way that Newcastle will be motivated and the way the crowd can get behind them and drive them on. But even so, Eddie Howe will be demanding that the standards are returned to where they were previously, because this is a result that Newcastle can regain that positive momentum they'd built post the international break.
Sheffield United have been competing a bit more since Chris Wilder's return, George, but you would hope that Newcastle's physicality and their fitness would be able to see them through this one.
You certainly would, yeah. But to kind of go back to the previous question, it is a big game, and it's a big game, I mean, because obviously at this point of the season, Newcastle have to try and win every game in order to stay where they are, to maintain their position in a European place or a potential European place. But it's a big game because they can't help themselves. They put themselves under pressure. They've done it throughout this season, where they've had good results or good run of results, and then it's been followed by a bad performance or a bad result, and it's put the pressure on them, and they've done it again. They've put it on themselves. So it's a big game for those reasons too.
We are back down to seventh, Chris, 3 points behind Manchester United, a golden opportunity slipping, as we've never finished above them in the Premier League. And I'll be honest, this annoys me, because this is quite possibly the worst Man United team I've ever seen in my life, and they are still above us in the league, and I don't get that.
Yeah, I like how this is such an important point, rather than the fact that it's made it slightly more complicated to definitely secure European football. It's the fact that Newcastle might finish below Manchester United.
Again,
I mean, I said it last season, and I still maintain it, that although over a 38-game season, usually your league table doesn't lie, I thought Newcastle United were a better team across the course of a 38-game season than Manchester United last season, but they ended up finishing behind them in the end. And that was the...
And losing a cup final to them as well.
Yeah. And losing a cup final to them, yeah. And Manchester United have repeatedly come back from situations where they've been awful within matches. They have been hammered on a few occasions this season, but then they also have managed to find a way as well to get positive results. And they're doing that at the moment. They're still going, they're still getting those positive results. Newcastle still have to go to Old Trafford as well, but it does feel frustrating that Newcastle have allowed that to slip. More so for me than the point of view that you said there about it's the first time Newcastle could finish above Manchester United in the Premier League. More that, as George was saying on Monday's podcast, for Newcastle to guarantee European football next season, they have to finish in sixth place. If they'd finish in seventh, there's a decent chance they'll get European football. But if they finish sixth, they will guarantee themselves some form of European qualification.
More importantly, George, there is very little margin for error, isn't there, if we want to get back into Europe. And three of our remaining games are away from home. And that is a big problem based on our away form.
It totally is, yeah, it totally is. So this is one of only two home games that Newcastle have left. The other one is against Brighton. Brighton are in a bad run of form at the minute. They've dropped out of the top 10 in the Premier League. But it's the other side of it that is the problem. There's three away games. They're not easy away matches, at Burnley, at Man United, and at Brentford. And The problem is that Newcastle are 15th in the away form league table. You know, at home, there's no problem. Yeah, there's been the odd poor result, but overall, their record under Howe has been absolutely formidable. But this season, there has just not been a magic formula, not been the same way of dealing with away matches that there was last season, and it's a big problem. And, you know, the other side of it is that they ship too many goals, and, you know, only Brentford, Luton, Forest, Sheffield United have lost more away games, and that, you know, that list of teams speaks for itself. It's not been good enough. There just has not been a formula, and you think that it puts huge pressure, but, you know, firstly to win those games against Sheffield United and Brighton at home, but, you know, it's going to be difficult for Newcastle to do what they want to do, because they've shown over the course of the season that they've not been good enough away from home. So that would be my concern at this point.
And the Lasses are not playing this weekend. We'll be back with more info on them very soon. But let's just finish off, Chris, with your report on the Aussie attitude to our trip down there.
Yes, well, I just wanted to give reference to Keegan and Dimmy from the Toon Under podcast, who I cheated on you guys with the other day and made an appearance. And
wreck off, Chris.
Sausage boy.
But they're big listeners and supporters of both The Athletic and our podcast, so it was interesting to appear on there. But they were chatting a lot, obviously, about Newcastle going down to play in Australia in these two post-season matches against both Spurs and an all-star side from the A-League. They're going to go to both matches. Keegan's taken the entire week off work. They're extremely excited, and for all of the, we get caught up in the Newcastle United bubble in terms of on Tyneside and this sort of way and the extra matches and that, from the point of view of footballing and physical side of things, it seems like a ludicrous trip. But for those Aussie mags out there, this is absolutely huge, and it's something that they are so excited about, just the opportunity to see them. I said, which player are you most excited about seeing? They said, it doesn't matter to us who plays. It really doesn't matter. If they just see the black and white stripes out there playing all the matches, they just...
That isn't true. If you tell me that team turns up and it's all under 23s and Paul Dummett and Mark Gillespie in goal, they'll be hell on. They will be going mad. Come on.
Well, I'm sure there would be, but at the same time, just to hear the enthusiasm... And this, I mean, George experienced it out in the US last year. And when we get caught up in this bubble, I think it's just important to reference that on the other side. And and that still, if you ask me, do I think Newcastle United should be going on this post-season trip and the balance of everything? No, I don't. But at the same time, for both PSR reasons, but more importantly now that I've heard this, the enthusiasm that people have for Newcastle out there, even though they're not from the area, they've built this affiliation with the club. And for them, this is the opportunity of a lifetime. And so for that reason, it has changed my perspective ever so slightly, and I wanted to share that with other people.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant, Chris. And totally agree. You know, I will never sort of take that sort of stuff for granted after what I sort of witnessed. You know, witnessed in the States in the summer. It's brilliant for Newcastle's Australian fans that the team are going over there. I hope they love it. I hope they enjoy it. I'm sure they will. And it might not be what players necessarily want to be doing straight after a hard season, a tough season, but the players who are there will absolutely embrace it. And you know, I'm sure they'll be moved and delighted with the response that they get there too.
Absolutely. Right then, chaps, let's round things off. Thank you very much for your time, George. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. I would just like to give a shout out to Matt Ritchie for successfully passing his HGV test, which is one of the most random things I've ever heard. And automatically need to know more, but I can't give any more because I don't know what the fuck that's about.
I love, you know, they often ask players, don't they, what are you going to do after football, or what would you do if you weren't a footballer? You know, lorry driver, Matt Ritchie, lorry driver, that's what I want to do.
Can you think of anything more terrifying than seeing Matt Ritchie behind the steering wheel of an HGV and getting just angry in traffic?
Well, you see, if I had to kind of guess at Matt Ritchie's future career, I mean, possibly coaching, possibly murderer, but I don't think I would have predicted HGV driver.
I think Matt Ritchie's dash cam on YouTube is going to be a big hit, I'll be honest. I think that's going to be fabulous.
Fucking hell, what are you doing? You think you need to turn left, you stupid fucking
idiot. Oh, I do love the M25. Fucking hell. Yeah, it'll be great. Anyway, right. That's it. Thanks a lot, Chris. Nearly forgot to say thank you to you.
Well, I mean, I wish we'd just forgotten about talking about Crystal Palace game in general, but at least that's out the way now, and let's focus, hopefully, on a more positive Sheffield United weekend.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much to all of you for listening out there as well. Have a good weekend. We'll speak to you on the other side. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.